KMOX, and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Welcome, folks, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, comments, concerns, or whatever about the outdoors. So, Mr. Kelly, before you take off,
yes,
how about a personal question?
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
What's your middle name?
Patrick.
Patrick. Just yes. Curious.
Brian Patrick Kelly. When I was in Kansas City doing the Royals, I made the mistake on one St. Patrick's Day of using my middle name and doing sports as Brian Patrick Kelly. And my boss said, oh, I love it. Use it all the time. And it's like, that's kind of hot dogish. I don't want to do that. No, use it. And so for like the next 2 years, I was Brian Patrick Kelly. And the day he got fired, I dropped it. But it worked. He was right. I mean, it caught people's attention. They would call me Patrick Kelly or Brian Patrick, you know.
Perfect.
But it's just a little.
Just curious.
Yeah, it's a little. I like it. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's just a little. To use it as an on-air name was just too much for me. But yeah, what's your middle name?
Rex.
Rex.
Right. Michael
I
Rex.
I like that. Michael Rex. MRM. Cool. That's nice.
Well, great.
Can we call you Rex?
Well, my father hated his first name. He was Donald Rex, so he never used Donald or Don or anything. He was always Rex Miller.
Oh, so we can't call you Rex because that's your dad.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
He's been gone for quite a while now.
Yeah, but, you know, so. Okay. All right, Michael Rex.
All right, thanks. Yes, folks, on Saturday morning we get together and we have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your landscape all over the place. How about that new garden space that this wild time? You decided, well, I'm going to go ahead and create a new garden space because we've got to stay home. We got to do this. We got to do that. I'm going to get my grandkids involved, my kids involved, maybe even the neighbor kids. Who knows? But just have fun with it. And maybe I got a call actually the other day. A lady was planting some things and she couldn't remember if she should use potting mix or potting soil to go into the pots. I said, well, of course, it is potting mix. Not potting soil. Potting soil holds too much moisture for containers. So it's, my perspective is, and I learned that basically way back when I was working at the botanical garden, they never used anything but potting mixes to grow anything whatsoever. How to improve your soil? How about, is this the time to prune my mugo pine right outside our kitchen window? Man, those candles are really elongating, but I like it. The bigger, the better, you know. I've got to keep it back pruned off the sidewalk, but height-wise, bring it on. How about those bugs and diseases? They're starting to show up. And the information that I share with you is hopefully making it a little easier or giving you some options for making good decisions. So final judgment is actually going to be on your shoulders. So, but anyway, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you having me over, inviting me into your car, your home, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another important player is Alex. He's producing today, so when you call, Alex just needs your first name and where you're calling from. He doesn't need to know what you're calling about or anything else. So what you're calling about, I will find out when I say, let's say, whoever it is, calling from wherever, and blah, blah, blah. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And I can come to your home as a business and do a landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, you'll find my email address and phone number where I can be reached. So let's get moving. Today's stroll, that is Good Gardening Stroll, is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I headed out from St. Louis South City, and went north on Gravois, became Tucker. And then I turned east on Spruce, there by the fire station. Then I could see a panorama a few blocks down to the east. The St. Louis Cardinals, the third base entrance. Rain was pouring down. All the ticket windows said closed. But there are red and white tulips still blooming right there. Very, very colorful. The oak leaf hydrangeas look fantastic. And they were fully dressed with their spring 2020 foliage. Stan the Man, his statue, the plaque there reminds that he was born in 1920, so he would have been 100 years old this year. So the boxwood and the yellow money wart, or creeping Jenny, whatever you want to call it, crawling in around the boxwood, around the base of Stan Musial's statue. More red tulips are in there. They're skyrocketing up. The dwarf crabapples, well, they're finished flowering, basically, but they're setting fruit right now. Also underneath them, you can find some liriope starting to come up and do all kinds of stuff. In other words, grow. The banners and awnings all over the stadium are everywhere. And though the season is on hold, it's still a great atmosphere pulsating from this wonderful place. As you know, KMOX is replaying historic Cardinal games. The nice aspect of doing that is there is no rainouts. So it could be pouring rain and we can have Cardinal games on KMOX. What could be better than that? And speaking about rainouts, actually, that's how I got my start at KMOX. Like 26 or plus years ago, they were rain out games. They didn't want to, let's say, spend the whole time talking sports, which now I probably think they do. So they started bringing in some people, five different people, to talk gardening. And they found out, wow, this is really great. And all these people are calling in during this. And that's how the Garden Hotline got a start. They picked me out of the five people because I have curly hair. It's the only thing, the only difference between me and everybody else. So shows you the advantage of having curly hair. You can end up with a show on KMOX. But if you do have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these spots.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, last night, lightning and thunder, so more than 1,000 people get struck by lightning every year in the United States, and more than 100 of them die from injuries related to lightning. So be careful if you're out and about and happen to be there when lightning starts happening. Let's head to Florissant and see what's going on with Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I got some beautiful hydrangeas and tulips for Easter. It seems kind of cool now, but can I plant them now or...
Well, to be honest with you, hydrangeas, yes, certainly you could go ahead and plant them. It doesn't matter about cool temperature-wise. The ground is starting to warm up. The tulips, you could go ahead and plant, but generally the tulips are not going to do anything in the future for you. So you can go ahead and try to plant them. They finish flowering, I'm sure. If the foliage is starting to red or tan or brown up, go ahead and cut the foliage off and plant the tulip bulbs about 4 inches or so deep, but don't expect a whole lot out of them.
Right, I know, but they'll come up like next year, right?
No, that's not necessarily going to be the case. The tulips seem to be hybridized to the point where they are not really reliable to come back the following year. Even if you bought new bulbs, just bulbs by themselves and planted them last fall, or if you bought them, you know, were a gift to you in pots or anything else, they just don't seem to have a longevity factor like they used to. They've been over-hybridized is what it is.
Okay, well, I'll forget about those. Now, we have some really, it seems like our soil is really tight, packed. Should I put something else in with the hydrangeas? Do I need to mix something with that? Or?
Yeah, definitely. You know, they need to have a well-drained soil, and depending upon the variety, some of them can take sun, some of them can't do so well in the sun. Some of them, if you put the sun lovers in the shade, they're not going to do really well. So, And just, yeah, mix some organic matter like compost and stuff in with the soil before you plant them.
Okay, and then I read somewhere where online that to when you put the plant in, just like put half the dirt in and then fill it with water, and when that goes away, put the rest of the dirt.
I don't know.
And how often do they? It doesn't make any difference. Okay.
No, that's crazy. The only thing I'm concerned with is digging the hole three times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. So in other words, the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground.
Okay, and then, like, how often do they need to be watered? I know they need a lot of water, so just make sure it's...
Yeah, I mean, extended periods of time where we don't have any rain or anything, go out there first, you know, week or so after you plant, make sure that they don't go through any kind of drought stress whatsoever, especially if the sun comes out tomorrow like it's supposed to and it gets windy. So probably for the first week, water them every day. Then after that, just use common sense.
Perfect. Thanks, Mike.
Certainly, my pleasure. Now let's head and see what's going on with Mark. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, Mike. What's the best pine tree for the St. Louis area?
As far as big pine trees?
Yeah, fairly good size, yeah.
I would say stay away from the pines in general and look at spruce trees.
Okay. Best variety of those?
Well, you want something that's going to get huge? You want something that's going to be relatively small? How big do you want something?
I'd say maybe 20 to 25 foot.
Probably, how far away are you going to put it from your house?
Probably about 50, probably about 50 feet.
Okay. My favorite, you know, of the spruce is the Norway spruce. That's just my own personal favorite. They're, as they age, they start having sort of weeping branches and needles and that kind of stuff versus the Colorado spruce, which are really stiff. But those are the two, Colorado spruce or a Norway spruce. That would be the one, you know, take a look at. And there's some, you know, some smaller varieties of the Colorado spruce as well. So that's what I would look at as those two. Norway spruce is going to get pretty big.
Thank you very much.
Yep, my pleasure. And now let's go to Dennis's yard. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, hi, Mike. Thank you for having me on. My father has a vegetable garden, and this is related to an incident last year where he has a very healthy garden of a variety of different plants, tomatoes, cucumbers, all sorts of things. But the issue seems to be that last year, and kind of has us scratching our heads, being a little bit puzzled here, that the zucchini and the cucumbers that came up and obviously vying out were looking really, really healthy. And when the blossoms started to form, all of a sudden they started just like falling off. So we don't think they were eaten by any kind of like an animal or anything like that, and think maybe some type, maybe an insect approached them. But it was the oddest thing. It was for both the zucchinis as well as the cucumbers. The blossoms, as they just started to form, all of them looked like they were almost like a surgical strike. They just were falling off. They weren't attached any longer here. So was there some type of a infestation or something that kind of created that kind of an experience? Or
no. So are you saying the flowers never fully opened?
Well, some started to open as far as with that here, but I mean, they just started to come off. So I guess, I mean, is there a difference if they're blooming and then they're kind of snipped off, or if they just start to form here? Because there's probably a combination of the two, and I can't really recall you know, which plants were doing which at the time, but it happened to both the zucchinis as well as the cucumbers.
Well, if the flowers are fully open, you can take like a Q-tip out and get some pollen and do some pollinating yourself to, you know, to start getting the fruit set. But usually what happens if plants abort the flowers is because they're stressed out, they're not getting the right kind of nutrients. And even if your father's been doing, you know, gardening years after years after years and in the same space and all this other stuff, I think it's a nutrient-related thing, because flowering stresses all kinds of plants, and especially something, you know, like a seasonal thing, like a vegetable or whatever it happens to be.
Gotcha. Okay, on that, so you would suggest trying to maybe enrich the soil with certain nutrients, or what would you suggest as our first approach here? Because we've got, you know, seeds that are going to be starting to develop and things like that towards this year. So I don't know if it's too late in the season to kind of enrich the soil, or if there's anything else in the
what I would do is take a soil sample and get it tested, find out what nutrients are there and what nutrients are not there, then make the adjustment according to what you'd be fertilizing with.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, very much, very good. Thank you very much, sir, and appreciate your time.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see, where should we go? Sappington, and that's Marianne. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Mike. My question is, I have beautiful Virginia bluebells this spring, and now, you know, the foliage is looking kind of wilted.
Right.
Can I go ahead and cut that foliage off now, or will that mess up next year's return?
I would not cut the foliage off until they really start, I mean, melting down entirely. So don't be in a hurry to do that, because the foliage, even if it doesn't look great, it still could be making some food. So in other words, nutrients and moisture coming up from the root system go out to the foliage. Then it uses, you know, sunlight or brightness or whatever to make, you know, chlorophyll, food, and then it sends it back down into the, you know, let's say root systems to keep them viable and coming back next year. So don't get really anxious to cut off the foliage.
Okay, it's just, they're just covering up all of my other new growth that's coming in. So I'll just wait. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just be patient.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly. Yeah, a lot of times people do get a, you know, think, oh, this is, you know, blah, blah, blah. But don't rush. I mean, there's no reason to. This spring has been spectacular as far as Virginia bluebells and lots of the columbine. I've never seen them looking so striking. You know, in various neighborhoods, when I take walks or when I go to people's homes or things, it's just been absolutely amazing. So let's see. Mary lives in South City. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. The good news is I don't have moles so far. But I am one of those callers asking you about pests. Between the squirrels and the birds and rabbits, getting into what I've recently planted, my annuals and so forth, and even my bulbs, lily bulbs and so forth. I read somewhere someone suggested cayenne pepper, but I was afraid it would harm the plant. I have birds trying to nest in my newly purchased ferns, hanging pot ferns, which normally I'll stick clear plastic forks upside down to discourage that, because I'm, as a mother and grandmother, I hate to evict new moms or expectant moms, but they always abandon their nest and it kills the plant. And you end up with a smelly mess. So every single time I'm, you know, with my kids growing up, it was like, oh, we can watch from our front window, the birds hatch and all this, and that never happened. So anyway, do you have any practical suggestions, or any of your callers, if they do as well, I welcome them.
Yeah,
thank you.
I mean, this is, you know, putting anything down is going to be a very hit and miss type circumstance. As far as digging down and getting bulbs, that's really not something that happens. Usually in that kind of situation, if the bulbs don't come back, it's just because they've, you know, not done well where they've been planted. So nobody can dig down far enough to actually get a, let's say, a lily bulb, which should be planted any place between 4 and 6 inches deep. Squirrels don't go that deep. And so,
well, the squirrels in our neighborhood, I'm pretty sure, are all teenage boys who are bored to death and are just getting into trouble. They used to decapitate my roses and mock me as I chased them. They'd stand there in the alley mocking me.
But no, there's really nothing. I mean, there's some repellents and things like that you could try, you know, but everything's going to be hit and miss, to be honest.
Okay. Okay. Thanks so much. You have a good day.
Yeah, I mean, putting cayenne pepper out is not going to damage the plant material or anything like that, so you don't have to worry about that. But let's see, should we get another call in before we take a break? Let's go to Kathy, and she lives in Waterloo. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mike. How are you this morning?
Very good.
Good. I'm calling about mandevilla and hibiscus. I've already purchased them, and I have them on a wagon, and I put them in the garage every night, and I bring them out every day for the sunshine. Can I put those in the ground yet?
Yeah, you could plant them in the ground.
It's warm enough. The ground is warm enough?
Yes.
Okay. And do they require any special fertilizer?
No, just routinely feed them. I mean, they're tropical plants, so, you know, every 2 to 3 weeks, go ahead and fertilize them.
And 2 to 3 weeks, yeah. And is it nothing special, just regular,
I mean, routinely,
fertilizer?
Yeah, you know, any of the, you know, Peters, Miracle-Gro, whatever it happens to be, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, fine. Thank you, and have a great day.
You do the same thing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the mandevilla vine, now, that is a vine, so I'm assuming you're going to grow it up on a trellis. And that's fine. I mean, I do that a lot of the time. What I do is put the, you know, put the pot, actually the mandevilla vine in a larger pot, and then put the pot at the base of the trellis and then let it climb up that way. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, it looks like it's raining, and I'm headed to Valmar after the show today, and they had emailed me yesterday and said, you know, maybe we should cancel because of the weather and stuff. But to be honest with you, when I come, if it's raining, it actually can reveal some of the situations that could be problematic in your landscape. So rain or shine, I go to people's homes. That's, you know, that's just kind of how it is. But right now, let's head over to Frank's yard. Frank, how are you today?
Thank you, Mike. I'm interested in hoping you can identify something for me. I live out here in Cottleville, and we have a lot of woods. And next to the driveway is a woodsy break. And I've noticed it for years, but it's a plant that has a real fine stem going up with an umbrella top to it. And this is the first year I noticed about 6 inches below the umbrella, I'm getting these, each plant only seems to have one, but these real pretty white flowers on it. And I kept looking at that because I'd never seen a plant that looked like that. And I thought maybe you had some clue.
Hmm. To be honest with you, you know, without actually seeing it, it's a little bit tough to identify. So,
I had never seen something. I mean, it comes up with about an eighth of an inch stem, as smooth as you can get, turns into a five-leaf green-looking umbrella. And I've seen them for years here. And like I say, they're not in the lawn. It's more of a woodsy area. And this is the first year I've seen about 6 inches below the umbrella, these each one has a white flower on it. And I thought, gee, I wonder what that thing is, you know?
Do you know, so it's, you know, I can't, you know, I hate to guess. If you can take a picture of it and send it to me, that's fine. Or a good way to find out plant material is also to go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website, mobot.org. And then you can, I mean, they have pictures of all kinds of things, weed identification, all various things, and maybe take a look at it that way.
Okay. I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm kind of like you, maybe not to the same degree, but I never think of a weed as necessarily being a weed. A weed's only something you decide you don't like.
Right.
And I look at this, and at first I thought, I wonder what kind of weed that is, but I couldn't touch it because it looked too pretty.
Now, I mean, there's trilliums, there's all kinds of, you know, wildflowers that potentially it could be, but without seeing it again, it's really, really tough to take a guess.
Well, I appreciate your show, Mike, and stay dry today, okay?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on your show. Let's go to Sally's yard, and she lives in Creve Coeur. Hi, Sally.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I have two questions. The first one is about spireas. I have a bunch of little princess spireas. I've had them for years. And I don't know if I'm just ahead of the curve because we've all been quarantined and I've never had so much time to look at my yard and work in my yard. But some of my spireas are not leafing out the way I think they should. And I went online to kind of investigate, and there was an article online that talked about cutting them way back in the fall, and then you would have better results in the spring. They won't look quite so woody, which is a common complaint of the spirea. What is your feeling about cutting those back?
I mean, there's no problem doing that, but also we have to understand, too, that plant material gets old, and sometimes just by getting old, it loses its vibrancy. And why, you know, let's say a neighbor that got planted, you know, neighboring spirea got planted at the same time, why that one looks vibrant and this one doesn't, is just like why some people at the same age look different than other people. So it could be an age factor. You could try, you know, go ahead and in the fall, cut the ones that you're disappointed in back and then see what happens next year.
Do you think that cutting them back now or trimming them back, maybe not drastically, but an inch or so would be helpful.
It would probably help a little bit, but, you know, leaving out the maximum amount of foliage on there is to the advantage of the plant material just in general.
Right.
Because the fact, you know, the leaves are what make food. So you cut them back, and if cutting an inch off is not going to make that much difference, so you could do that, but it's not going to make them all, you know, make them look all that much better, I wouldn't think.
Okay. The other question that I have is, what do you know about a type of crepe myrtle called a Pocomoke dwarf crepe myrtle? P-O-C-O-M-O-K-E.
You know, I don't know specific varieties of the crepe myrtle, but if it's a dwarf, you know, it's, you know, and it's locally available, I would say it sounds fantastic.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking about replacing some of my spirea with these dwarf crepe myrtles because they seem to be about the same size, mature size. They only get about 2 feet tall.
Right.
And I want something that's small and compact.
Right. And, you know, that particular variety, as long as you're pretty sure that it's going to stay relatively small, because 2 feet sounds awfully small for a crepe myrtle, even dwarf. Usually
really?
Dwarf means about 4 feet or 4 feet plus.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Sure.
You have a great day.
You do the same.
Bye now.
And now let's head out to St. Charles and see what's going on with Dee. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Mike. Love your show. I'm wondering if it's too late to trim my Rose of Sharon.
No. I mean, it's basically it would have been ideal to do it earlier, but it's not flowering yet. So by pruning it, as long as, you know, you just realize it may set, you know, the flower bud set back a little bit. Ideally, you would have done it earlier, but since you haven't, probably what I would do is you've probably got, let's say, 15 or 20 different branches coming up. Potentially, they're going to have the flowers on it. Maybe cut half of them back and leave the other half there and see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah, Rose of Sharon, I mean, they're I like them a lot. I don't have any in my landscape. It's like I like a lot of plant materials, but what I do is I enjoy them in somebody else's yard because you can't have everything in your yard that you do like. So
that's exactly right. And it's a late bloomer.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
This is Steve. I'm calling from Port Orange, Florida.
Ooh.
And, yes, and some lady answered a question for me, but I have a hibiscus cerevel. What is the proper distance, you know, for them? And I treated one with Voc oil. I was thinking maybe that just being close that it was dropping leaves, but I heard you say that you should fertilize them like every 2 weeks. Is that proper?
Well, I mean, you don't need to do that if they're in Florida, probably, but, you know, once a month for sure. And you're going to be fertilizing them year round because they don't go through the deciduous, you know, cycle like they would here. And hers was a tropical one that's not a hardy variety. The varieties that you're growing are hardy where you live. They wouldn't be hardy here.
Yeah,
there are hardy hibiscus, but
zone 8 or 9, something like that.
Yeah, and probably as big as they get, you know, in the warmer environments. I would say if you put them any closer than 10 feet apart, that's probably a little bit too tight.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, how safe, because I use it probably maybe 4 times a year, how safe is Roundup? I know the dangers, you know, of it, and I know the lawsuits and all that, but it's still on the market. But how safe, you know, is it as long as you're wearing proper, you know, I don't breathe it, you know, whenever I'm, you know, I have it in the sprayer and such. But I just wanted to know your thought on it.
Well, I started using Roundup back in 1977 when I started at the Missouri Botanical Garden. And I continue to use it, you know, up to this day, basically. So I feel pretty secure with it. You know, I haven't, you know, gotten in a situation where I need the type that actually can kill woody plants like poison ivy and, you know, wild grapes and things along that line. But potentially there's problems with anything. And as long as you have common sense, I think that's all you really need.
And then I wanted to say one thing, Mike. The only Mike Miller that I know, and I really don't like them, is the University of Florida. And you probably know of that player who played in the NBA. But you're the only other Mike Miller that I know besides that guy. Well, we need to bring baseball back, you know. And I'm hoping they bring it down here because I live. Probably from Jupiter, it's a good 2-hour drive, but I can't wait until they get that started back. Yeah, the Redbirds, yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling from Florida. So,
okay, thank you, Mike.
Yep, Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Let's head over to Tim's yard. Tim, how are you today?
Doing good, thanks.
Great.
I had a question about a tree. I was trying to replace a basswood that just grew too large, and so I took it down, and I was looking at something called a yellowwood, but it says it's native to southwest Missouri. I found it on the Missouri Conservation website on trees. I was just wondering if you've seen any of those in St. Louis and how they do up here.
Yeah, they seem to do okay. I mean, there probably is maybe, there used to be, I don't know if they're still there, one or two or three at the Botanical Garden.
Okay.
And also you could just, you know, again, check their website, mobod.org, and they may have some out the Shaw Nature Reserve, which is out in Gray Summit. So I would take a look there. You know, just check their website.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Do you know if those get very large from your experience?
Yeah, they get pretty big. They're not small trees, but they're not very fast growing.
Okay. Sounds good for the area I've got. So thank you.
All right. Sounds perfect. And a couple people called. I don't know if we can get to them, but the plant, you know, that the gentleman described with the umbrella and the white flower potentially could be mayapple. The reason why I was a bit confused, because mayapples have a stem that's about 6 or 8 inches tall, where then the umbrella comes up. He said it was 2 inches. So, you know, that's where I got a little bit confused. But so anyway, could be a mayapple. And now let's go to Shirley's. Hi, Shirley.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have two or three problems here. One, yesterday I just noticed those big spongy orange balls on my evergreen tree. I'd like to know what to do about those.
Basically, it's related to the fact that you have some apples, crab apples, hawthorns, or something nearby, and it's a disease that goes back and forth between them. And basically, all you can do is cut those things off.
Okay, don't need any spray of any kind.
Well, I mean, the spraying it's really difficult to do. You're going to have to find out what the source is, spray the source, and then, you know, as preventative, there's not really too much you can do.
Well, there's a crabapple tree in my neighbor's yard that's about 10 feet from it, so that's
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, this is probably a juniper would be my guess, but in the future, if you have this one taken down, get the junipers from that have a history that are Japanese versus the ones whose history is American. Because a Japanese variety seems to be less prone to get this, you know, horrible orange ball. Looks like a smashed, you know, a smashed orange is really what it looks like.
Yeah, this is close to 20 years old, too.
Right.
Okay. I have a couple more. Because neem oil, I need to spray that if it's not too late.
It's probably getting, you're probably kind of at the end as far as being able to spray.
Okay, when I do spray it, do I spray everything? I've never done it before, so.
Well, just read the label on what you're actually spraying it for, and then see if it, you know, if it works on what you're spraying it on.
Well, it'd be for fungus. Okay. I have a problem with fungus. I wonder if it might just be in the ground.
Probably, generally fungus is not going to come up out of the ground and get onto your plant material. It's an airborne thing that goes between the plant materials.
Oh, I see. Okay. And I have a blue spruce that it's losing its blue. What do I put on it?
Yeah, basically you could try, you know, adding some like iron sulfate or something to the ground to change the pH, but also it could just be an aging factor as well. I don't know how old this blue spruce is, but
it's only about 2 years old.
Oh,
three.
Well, So then it shouldn't really be losing it unless it really wasn't a really good variety of blue spruce initially. But try to get some iron sulfate and mix it in around the ground and, you know, see if you can get the ground pH to change and get it back to being a little bit more blue.
Okay. On one side, on the south side where it gets more sun, I noticed that it's kind of losing its balance, its shape, and it's growing more. Can I trim a little bit off that side?
Not this time of year. But if you want to do it, basically it's going to grow towards the sun. And that's going to, you could cut this off, but you're going to be right back to where you are right now in a few years because everything wants to reach towards the sun for the most part.
Okay, so I'm going to have a lopsided tree.
Yes,
eventually.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll just have to get used to that again.
Right, exactly. Perfection is not going to happen. Thanks, Shirley. Yeah, folks, yeah, if you have any questions or concerns, you can give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex just needs your name and where you're calling from. Back after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trial Hour, which I'll be giving shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off.
Yes.
You know what last Wednesday was?
No.
50th anniversary of Earth Day.
You're
very much into the environment and
I
stuff
am.
Like that. So.
I spent a lot of Monday and Tuesday in the earth, digging in it, playing in it. I loved it. It was great.
Well, that's fantastic.
Did you celebrate Earth Day?
Just by thinking, man, oh, man, 50 years ago, let's see, I would have been 20. I was in the Air Force at that particular time.
Yeah?
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Earth Day. I mean, what a great concept. And, you know, for it to stay, let's say, viable. For all this time, I think that's great.
And maybe as strong as ever.
Right.
You know, in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a good thing to celebrate.
Absolutely.
I mean, where would we be without the Earth?
I don't know.
I don't know either. So, yeah, we better take care of it.
Right.
I'm going to go hug a tree.
Okay, good. Okay. There's plenty in the park right out there.
Yeah, there are. And they're all wet.
Yes, folks. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show, where we can discuss plant selections, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds for annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, house plants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board, that's Alex. He's producing. So when you call, all he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. During the week, I spend time and on weekends as well. Today, I'm headed towards Valmar. And I do consultations. And this is, it's my business. So that's, besides the other crazy stuff I do. But anyway, so I come to your home. We can talk about aesthetics, problem solving. You can have a list of situations. And I keep my eyes open for things that I might think are impacting your landscape that maybe you have not considered. What you can do is go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and go to the homepage where my email address and phone number are listed, and we can get together, and I'll come to your home, and we can talk. I can make recommendations for plant material to change out or to add plants, care, maintenance, and everything else. The tip of the trial is a special recognition for an individual group or group that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, the City Nature Challenge of 2020 launches today, basically. And a St. Louis Area City Nature Challenge invites area residents to explore and document the natural world around them as part of this global challenge of what we're having to deal with. So the challenge runs from yesterday, April 24th, till Sunday, May 3rd. And what you want to do is you want to just kind of participate. Individuals are asked to observe and document species of plants, birds, and animals that are used, basically having an impact that they're seeing from their home. And what you do then, you go to lowercase I, then Naturalist. And that's a free mobile app, and put the information that you found in there. So get out there, enjoy as much as we possibly can all this crazy stuff with having to stay home. And why don't we keep, you know, get involved in this? So again, it's the free mobile app, lowercase I, the Naturalist, N-A-T-U-R-A-L-I-S-T. So, and all kinds of other stuff going on. Yesterday was a special anniversary for me as well. Back in 1969, I went into the Air Force on April 24th. I left St. Louis, and my first stop was Lackland Air Force Base, which is in San Antonio. Then I went from there to Lowry Air Force Base, which is in Colorado. That was where I got my technical training to take a look at the imagery for the B-52 flights and things like that. Then I went from there to Shreveport for Barksdale Air Force Base, then March Air Force Base, then Anderson Air Force Base on Guam, and then back to March. So I spent 3 years and 9 months in the Air Force. I got a 3 month early out back in 73 so I could actually go to school. And I was discharged when I was in Riverside, California. So consequently, I stayed out in California and went to school. And then I came back to St. Louis to work at the Botanical Garden. So all kinds of different stuff going on. But yesterday, it was 51 years ago I went into the Air Force. That's scary, frightening, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's go over to Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I have a question about an ash tree that it's probably about 45 years old at least. And it's been very slow coming out this spring. It is finally coming out. And we actually had it looked at a couple of years ago, you know, by a professional. And, of course, I'm worried about the emerald ash
borers.
Bug or bore, whatever right. It is. Should I just wait and see what it does, or what do you suggest?
Well, some of the trees are kind of out of sequence. We have three sugar maples around our house because we're on a corner. And they are finally starting to leaf out. I mean, they are way behind a lot of the other trees. So okay. It's just, you know, it's just one of those kind of quirky things. Why these versus those? I mean, the silver maples, which the sugar maples are related to, they've already flowered. They've already dropped all their maple squirts. They're fully leafed out. The leaves are full sized. And why the sugar maples? Usually they're a little bit later, but it seemed like this year I kept thinking, this is really, really, really slow. So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
You know, I have another question about the tree. We'd hate to lose it. I mean, we always take care of it, keep it trimmed, mm-hmm. and have professionals, you know, take care of it. Would it help at all to fertilize it?
Basically, you're probably going to help more if you do something called deep root feeding, where you go out about halfway from the trunk to the extension mm-hmm. of the drip line, auger holes, and backfill those holes. So in other words, you're really feeding the soil, then the soil will feed the trees. Fertilizing is not necessarily going to help help all that much.
Oh, okay. So just wait and see, and hopefully it does okay.
Right. And again, you know, deep root feeding is the ideal thing. That's a great way to feed your tree, keep your tree healthy, because your soil is going to be healthy. That will help your tree.
So do they sell? Are you talking about those stakes that you drill?
No, you get an electric drill. You auger holes in the ground and then about 6 inches deep, and then you backfill those holes with compost.
Oh, just with compost?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We can do that. Oh, okay. Oh, that sounds good. Well, I was wondering about those tree stakes, and my husband said he didn't think they did anything.
Well, they're solid, and you know, I'm not saying they don't do anything, but it takes them so long to dissolve. You probably already sold the home and moved to, you know, wherever.
So do the auger about 6 inches.
Yeah, 6 inches deep. Put the holes about 2 feet apart, and then go out another 2 feet, and then put another circle around your entire tree, and then do the same thing all the way around until you get just beyond the drip line of the tree. That's where all the feeder roots are going to be from that point outward.
And any kind of compost or?
Yeah, well, you know, St. Louis composting obviously is going to be the best.
Right.
But
we go there. We get stuff.
So okay, great. Bulk. Yeah, so, I mean, they got bags. They've got bulk. But, so start out halfway from the trunk to the drip line. do a concentric circle, then move out 2 more feet, and then the final circle will be just beyond the drip line of the tree.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you very much. You had a lot of callers today.
Yes.
I listen to you every Saturday.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go, and we're headed to Crestwood, and that's where Pat lives. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Mike. This is Pat.
Hi.
I'd like to dig up my jonquils and daffodils, and I just don't know exactly what I should do. They've still got the greens on the top. So if I want to keep them and put them in pots for next year, do I let them dry out? Do I plant them in the pots now or what?
Basically, let the foliage totally brown. Then, you know, don't cut it off or anything so you know right where they are. Dig them up and then just put them in like paper bags with newspaper in between them and just hold them until next fall and then put them in pots next fall.
Okay, the fall this year, this coming fall.
Yes, right.
And then how deep would I plant them?
Basically the same depth you do in the outside. I grow a lot of them in pots, and I put them down about, I got big pots, but about 6 inches or so.
Okay.
4 to 6 inches.
Okay, so just let them dry in paper bags with newspaper, and then I can get rid of the foliage, and then in the fall put them about 6 inch deep in pots.
Right, 4 to 6 inches.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Certainly. And now let's head out to Baldwin and see what's going on with Jim. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I've got a question in regards to a dogwood. I'm wanting to take a look at planting. The breed is Cornicosa, either a Japanese or a Florida. I want the pink flowers. And I'm wondering, is this area good, conducive to a healthy growth for that?
Yeah, there's plenty of pink dogwoods around. You're going to have to get the one that's, I don't think the Kusa dogwood, the Japanese variety, has a white.
It doesn't.
They only have the white one. So you're going to have to get the Cornus Florida with the pink variety.
Okay.
Now, any of the color ones are not quite as strong or healthy. This year, they're spectacular. But some years, and longevity factor, they're probably not going to last as long as, let's say, the white ones. But, yeah, just enjoy it.
A good time to plant would be?
Basically, if you can find them now, get them in the ground as soon as you possibly can. Ideally, fall would be the better time, but usually by that time, they're always all sold out. So it just depends, you know.
How tall would be a good, I want to get good stable growth, so should I get maybe 10-foot one or?
No, that's way too high. So get something between like 6 and 8 feet. 10 feet, the root ball and everything else. Just make sure that it's in well-drained soil. They cannot handle wet circumstances. And dig the hole 3 times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. So when you put it down in the hole, it's the top of the root ball is going to be above the surrounding ground. And then put about 2 to 3 inches of mulch over the root system or the top of the ball.
Okay, exposure to sun, and that's it.
They can take sun. They can take sun. They can take shade. They're really tough and durable.
All right. Okay. Good enough. Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate
my pleasure. And now let's go to James, and he lives in Florissant. Hi, James.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning. My wife and I, we grow a lot of food in containers. So of our romaine lettuce and also our broccoli was really attacked pretty bad last year. We got one good harvest off the romaine lettuce and cabbage. And we're wondering if there's some type of something we can do before the bugs come to spray on them or to protect them, preventive type of measures that we could use.
When they're growing, they're cool season type things, everything you're talking about. So there's not a whole lot of bug activity that's going to be problematic. If they start going downhills because, you know, the weather starts warming up, then there's going to be more bugs. But I would say harvest before, you know, while the weather's still cool, would be the easier thing to do. Now, there are insecticidal soaps and stuff like that, but for the most part, they have to be sprayed, you know, directly where they're going to actually hit the insect. So it's.
Okay.
But,
one more quick question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I was going to say, you're growing cool season stuff that when we get into mid-June, they're already headed downhill, regardless of whether it's by bugs or just the weather or temperatures.
Okay. Now, what do you know about Epsom salt? I've been doing a lot of research that Epsom salt is a good fertilizer.
You know
anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff, so it just depends upon what your soil actually needs. Again, before you start buying stuff and investing, let's say, mental or physically in something, I'd get a soil test done, find out what there is there, then find out what the Epsom salts can do to the advantage of your plant material, and find out if it's actually necessary. But to universally say, you'll put this down, it's kind of like the days of old when everybody was told to put lime on their lawn, and that was completely wrong. Lawn likes an acidic soil, slightly acidic, so putting lime down was actually detrimental, but everybody was doing it because they were told to. And that's kind of the way I feel about the Epsom salts.
We have had a ton of success with growing slips on the inside of the house, our sweet potatoes, purple sweet potatoes. When is it too early to go ahead and start putting them outside?
You could do it now. I mean, the temperature is not going to get, you know, low enough that's going to, if you want to keep them inside, sure, you can keep them inside until, you know, May 1st or whatever. But if you want to plant it, you don't want to necessarily go out in this weather. But as soon as you can get out and do it and feel comfortable, then just plant them.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your show. And now that's Lebanon, and that's where Sharon lives. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
Good. Last week, I think it was, there was a lady on your show, and I just caught the tail end of it, that had a vinca garden, and the grass was coming up in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you had suggested something, I think, or she was talking about something, that would kill just the grass and not the vinca.
Yeah, basically it's grass killer. So you can go to your favorite garden center and it'll say grass killer. It kills grass, but it won't have any impact on the vinca or any kind of broadleaf plant at all. Now, obviously,
okay,
you got to watch out when I say something like that. That's kind of a generalized thing. You got to watch out for temperatures and other factors as well. So you don't want to spray stuff when the temperatures are really warm and those kind of things. But, you know, if you have a kind of a big stand of grass growing into anything, it may take a couple years to finally eradicate it entirely.
Okay. All right. And I was going to comment. I have a big holly tree outside of a window, and when I look at that tree in the spring, usually around February, March, somewhere around in there, the holly berries are just beautiful. And all of a sudden, the robins come in, and they're all gone.
Right.
This year, the holly berry trees still have all their berries on them.
Hmm.
My neighbors, mine, everybody's. And it's just, it's weird, like you said. It's a weird year.
Right. So the robins are finding other stuff to eat. So.
Yes, obviously, because I can see a robin sitting in that tree, but it won't eat the berries.
Huh, that's surprising.
That's what I said. I called, like, wild birds and that, and they couldn't explain anything to me either.
Right.
But I thought, it is weird.
Yep.
Yep. All righty. Within a day, normally they have it cleared, but I guess they're not hungry this year.
I guess they wanted to give you a break.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, and you have a good day.
You do the same. And let's go over to Gloria's yard. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Mike. I have questions about fertilizing an azalea and a Japanese honeycrisp apple tree. What time of year do you do that?
Basically, the azaleas, this is the time of year when they flower. This is the time of year when they need food. You should kind of start feeding them around the 1st of April. Feed them April, May, June, and then that's it. And get an acid-based fertilizer. With the fruit trees, you know, again, I prefer to just feed the soil with, you know, augering holes and putting compost in down into the holes versus, like, feeding the actual, you know, apple tree.
Okay. And in the azaleas, there's one section the leaves are sort of a pale yellow, and it looks a little frail. What can I do to beef that up and get it green like the rest?
Basically, that azalea food for acid-loving plants will have the iron and the sulfur, and that should change those leaves back to more of a green. But it's not going to happen instantaneously. It's going to take a couple years.
Do I put that down now?
Yes.
April, May, and June?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, one other question, Mike. What's a good privacy bush that doesn't get too wide but is tall?
How tall are we talking?
Maybe 8 feet.
Not too wide. Because most of them, you know, that are going to get that tall are going to get, you know, be 8 feet wide too. So,
right.
I mean, there's some of the varieties of juniper. If you want an evergreen like that, an upright juniper. So, like a Hetzi juniper.
Hetzi?
Yeah, H-E-T-Z-I-I.
What do you think of the emerald green? What's the name of them? Arborvitae.
Right.
What is?
Well, they're going to be narrow, but they're going to get, you know, I mean, they're going to get tall. And so you could try that if you want to go with that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're going to get way taller than the 8 feet that you're talking about.
Right. Thanks again.
All right. Okay. And should we take a break? Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I was wondering, do you do very well when you propagate, like, forsythias?
I used to do a lot of that, but I don't do it anymore. But it's you just have to be very patient. You take 1 foot cutting, you know, and you get the hormones and everything else growing in a pot. And it's years before you actually get a shrub. But, I mean, to get them rooted and everything else, it's not all that difficult.
Well, I have about 75, 50 yards out. I have woods between houses, and it's probably about 30 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And the neighbor behind me went in a couple years ago, and I guess he's kind of a naturalist or something. He was going through, you know, cleaning out our woods between
right.
us, and he was pulling out all this little shrubbery and all this stuff, and it was a lot of honeysuckle.
Right.
And he wanted to get rid of it because it has snakes in it and all this stuff. But we have deer and all this stuff all through there. But so I'm trying to plant something that will grow and kind of, you know, block out his house, you know. I mean, I don't see his house when it's fully bloomed, you know, while
right.
all the trees
leafed out. Right.
But what else could I plant, you know, in the common woods? It's our property, but it's woods.
Right. Yeah. Probably not deep in the woods because you got competition of the tree roots. But on the perimeter or the front edge of the woods, look at some of the viburnums, like leatherleaf viburnum and, you know, a couple different
okay.
varieties of viburnum.
Okay. Now, my neighbor has viburnum bushes. That's a real fragrant one, isn't it?
Some are fragrant, some are not.
Yeah, theirs is real fragrant.
Ah.
What if I took clippings from there?
Like I said, it's going to be years and years and years before you're
yeah.
going to get any kind of shrub, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you
okay.
have to look at
and
these.
I was going to, we used to have red buds back there years ago. I was going to get some from the,
the Arbor Society or whatever.
Right, Stand. Right. Yeah, yeah. That you get the trees from, you know.
Right.
And
or bare root, and they're about a foot long. So, again, as long as you're patient, it's going to take
yeah.
decades.
Well, I've lived here 40 years, so, you know, I'm not going anywhere. But those will do good out in the woody area, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay, well, really enjoy your show. You're so knowledgeable and pleasant. So,
in other words, I'm full of it.
But so knowledgeable with it, though.
Well, great. Well, let's head over to Denny's now. Denny lives in Highland. Hi, Denny.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have two questions. One is about, I have a couple of very mature Rosa Sharons, which bloom beautifully every year. But I'm having just tons of volunteers come up around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the looks of that. Is there anything I can do with them other than just keep cutting them back?
Basically, that's about all you can do as far as to get
okay.
rid of the volunteers.
Okay. And the second question, my wife and I bought a shamrock plant last spring, and we kept it on a kept it in a three-season room this winter and it survived. Mm-hmm. And this spring, it is absolutely beautiful. And I was just wondering, what do I need to keep it looking this good? It is just gorgeous, and we're really enjoying it. Is there should we be trimming it back at all? Or
no, just best thing to do is just leave it alone. Don't put, okay. You know, if you're going to put it, you can repot it, but don't put it into a very larger pot, so maybe one inch bigger. But they're always going to go through their ups and down cycles. So just there's going to be times when they really look striking and other times where they don't look so striking.
How about fertilizing?
Very low analysis fertilizer. So don't overfeed it. They're kind of like an herb as far as, with, you know, if you overfeed, you can cause more problems than do good.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much, Mike. Have a good one.
So low analysis fertilizer and just, you know, probably half label rate. In that kind of situation, I'd probably get, you know, some kind of liquid. And if it says put a tablespoon in a gallon, you know, you're not going to put that much in. But and probably only fertilize when it really looks good. Don't fertilize when it starts looking bad because it's going through its rest cycle.
That's just opposite of what we would think, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Certainly. My pleasure. And let's see. Now let's go over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Good.
I have a hint for you. I have taken some, like the Dairy Queen or the whatever store, those large cakes that serve 24 and they have the nice plastic tray.
Mm-hmm.
I have put sown in the garden soil or potting soil. I have sown seeds and started them like outside, and if it gets too cold, just cover it up.
Sounds perfect. Now, how about drainage though? If it's outside and it really pours, aren't they going to get too wet if they don't have drainage holes, or do they have holes?
Well, I got my drill.
Ah.
Okay, and then my question is, I got a Easter lily. Can they be set out?
Absolutely. So as soon as they finish flowering, don't cut the leaves off. You know, just put the stem in the ground, cut the flower, get rid of the flower, and just leave it alone. So you want to put it probably well-drained area, sunny locations by far the best. Part shade is okay. If the part shade is not a result of trees. And about the bulb of the, you know, it's a lily, so mm-hmm. basically about 4 to 6 inches deep.
Okay, and then my last question is, in my asparagus, I got a bunch of little weeds coming out, but I also have some wonderful dock, and I got what we always call bachelor buttons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to dig them out because it's too deep. I usually cover it later on, but should I just wipe them with a sponge with a Roundup or what?
Yeah, that would probably be the easiest thing to do.
Okay. I appreciate you. Thank you very much, and stay safe and blessed.
Well, thank you very much, and the same to you. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
You know, when I'm out and about or whatever, I can always tell as I'm heading out if I hear a bird singing or the birds are out eating seed or whatever, then it's not raining all that hard. So just one of those goofy things I happen to do. Let's head over to Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm having a problem with Wigelia bush or Wigelia, mm-hmm. however you pronounce it. Last year, after it quit blooming and that, I noticed that some of the branches looked kind of sickish. And this year, normally by this time, it's bloomed with the beautiful red, ruby red flowers right. on it. So far, it hasn't bloomed. And the inside of the bush, the branches are dry and they are brittle and they just break off.
Right.
So I only have the perimeter of the bush that's growing.
So that's a maturity thing, and this is just a really old shrub.
It's about 8 years old.
Yeah. So, I mean, this particular variety, some of them will last a lot longer than that, but other ones won't. Maybe it's the location or whatever it happens to be, but it sounds like it's sort of in the, I don't want to say the end of its life, but it's not going to, it's never going to be robust again like it was.
Is there any fertilizer? Am I fertilizing it wrong or anything?
You're not probably doing anything wrong. It's an aging factor more so than anything. Why it would age faster than some other ones of the same variety that can live, you know, do well for twice as long. It's just every circumstance and situation is different. And this one, you know, you could fertilize. You can do anything you want to, but you're not going to turn it around.
Yes, because I've had them before, and they've lasted, you know, 10, 15 years.
Right.
This is the first one I've had that didn't. So
yeah, so basically,
I guess I'll
this,
just leave it go. Yeah. I noticed that one side of the bush that the roots were exposed a little bit. We had a heavy rain, and it kind of washed away some of the mulch and that. Should I cover that up again or just cut it down?
Yeah, exposed roots is not all that problematic, to be honest.
Okay.
So
just wait and cut it down when it finally kicks the bucket, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, and another question I have is, I have some elephant ears that I haven't planted yet. Is it too late to put them in the ground?
Oh, heavens no. I haven't even planted mine yet.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I'll just get out there. Not today,
right. But
get out there and get them in.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Certainly.
Thank you so much. You have a great day. Stay safe.
Yes, you do the same thing. And now let's go to Herman, and Herman lives in Belleville. Hi, Herman.
Good morning, Mike. I want to plant some forsythia bushes on the front of my property. I can't locate any, and I was wondering how far apart should those be planted?
Basically, if you're getting the standard forsythia and you don't want to have them just jamming into each other, about 6 to 8 feet apart. And now, don't plant them in a straight line. Plant them in a zigzag.
Plant them in a what?
Zigzag. So, in other words, not in a straight line.
Okay. All right. And do you have any idea where I could locate those?
The garden centers are having tragic problems. So, you know, you're in Belleville, try Effinger's Garden Center.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. And probably a lot of these garden centers are saying, you know, you call them, you contact them, you make your order, you do it online, and then they'll bring the plants out to you. So it just depends. Things are so, you know, crazy. So just give them a call and see what they say.
Okay. Will do. Thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure. Now let's go from Herman to Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, this is Debbie. You got the wife.
Oh,
sorry about that.
I want to talk to Jerry. No, I don't care.
Well, he's standing next to me. We got you on speaker. We bought three and had three plants or trees in our yard, and one's a green giant, which I think is in the cypress range.
Yeah, it's an arborvitae.
Yeah, and a sunset maple and a river bark birch, if I'm saying that.
Right.
They staked all of those, and it's been about a year. When are those stakes supposed to come out?
A year is more than enough. A year is just to stabilize them, and especially if they're staked too stiffly, then they're not blowing in the wind, and that's not a good thing. So get those stakes off of them.
Okay. Can they cause damage to the bark? Because the sunset maple looks like it's, when one of the landscapers was out, he said, oh, it looks like it's a little stressed toward the bottom.
Yeah, they can. I mean, the staking, if it rubs, you know, if the tree's blowing and depending upon what they've got it wrapped around the trunk, it could rub some of the bark, but it's not too much you can do about it other than just getting the stakes out of there.
Okay. And then a second question. We have our property lines up with another property, and we'd like to form a natural wall to hide that property from ours. What would you suggest?
Are you looking evergreen? Are you looking how much space?
Probably more evergreen, we were thinking, because we want something full, like, you know, that'll come up from the ground full and stay that way.
I'd probably look at maybe a combination of the Nigra, N-I-G-R-A, Nigra U, mixed in with viburnums.
Okay.
And, like, stagger, you know, individually One viburnum, then one Nigra U, then one viburnum, then one Nigra U. And put them about 5 to 6 feet apart.
Okay. And how tall will they grow?
Well, each of them should get, the Nigra U will get about 6 feet high. So it's basically to keep it filled at the ground level. And then the viburnum can get, depending upon the variety that you get, let's say 8 to 10 feet high.
Okay. That's probably about as high as we need. We need it to be like 10 or 12 feet probably. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Take care.
Yep. And, Gail, if you can do it real quick, you got about a minute.
Yes, I can. I have a, this is in the house, a house plant, a ponytail palm.
Mm-hmm.
My ceilings are 8 feet, and it's bent over at the top because it's too tall.
Whoa.
When I was at the botanical gardens, I had gone to into the center and asked them. They found something online that you can cut them off lower, and then they'll get sprouts around the bulb and up at the top of the stem where you cut.
Right.
And that's okay to do?
You can do that, but just you're going to have to be very, very, very patient. You're talking about multiple years before you're going
to
get
6
them.
Months to 8 months before you even see sprouts.
Yeah, I would say that's even being a little bit optimistic.
Okay. Well, it's in a good spot because it's growing really great there.
Yeah, sounds
great.
I'm
not going to move it.
Well, that sounds perfect.
Okay. One quick question, if I can. You always say don't use potting soil, use potting mix.
Right.
What do you use the potting soil for then?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
Just to you know, fill in spaces at garden centers and big bags on pallets. I don't know what that stuff's for.
Oh, my. Okay. I was just wondering. I've heard you say it this morning again, so
right.
I thought I'd ask.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mike.
Certainly. And thanks to everybody. Sorry, Frank, Bob, and Greg, we're not going to be able to get to you this week, but hopefully the Garden Hotline will be around next week. So anyway, enjoy the rain. We needed it. It was getting a little dry. Mike Miller, see you next week.